1,000 complications, and we get into a few of those 1,000 complications on this show. Our occasional contributor, Jack Baldwin, interviews Bob Kolodny from Extinction Rebellion New York on Citizens Assemblies. It's on this Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. And Extinction Rebellion Radio is on WBAI every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Please join us. This is not a rebellious conversation that you want to miss.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Black Star News with Milton Alamadi. Coming up is 3 p.m.
Greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome to Black Star News Show, your favorite Pan-African show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio, also live streaming on WBAI.org. Today, we celebrate the life and times and the legacy of Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who died Sunday at age 90. I call him a warrior priest. Yes, a spiritual leader, but also a great general of national liberation. A fighter against injustice, not only in South Africa, throughout the entire African continent, and in other parts of the world. Like his good friend, the late Nelson Mandela, Madiba, he was a prominent champion for the rights of Palestinians to self-determination and independence. He was a champion of the marginalized, the workers, the farmers, students. These were his elite. Joining me today to discuss the life of this remarkable man is Colin Benjamin, managing editor of Black Star News. Colin, welcome to the show.
Yes, good afternoon, my brother. Good afternoon to everybody.
Excellent. Listeners, we want you to also join in this celebration today. So I'm giving you the number to call, and that's 212-209-2877. Along the way, I will be reminding you how you can support WBAI, because we're only here because of your permission. Without your support, we would not be able to bring you Black Star News Show. Continue supporting us as we close the year. You can do so by calling 212-209-2877. Any donation will be put to good use. As you know, we also have our power drive, and that's to pay our transmitter at 4 Times Square. So please also support our tower fund, and you can do so by going to www.towerfund.wbai.org. And the number for listeners, once again, is 212-209-2877. Colin Benjamin,
Yes, sir.
Let me first give you a summary of my Bishop Tutu, and then I'd like to hear yours. If we are going to have ministers in Africa and in other parts of the world, give me a Desmond Tutu any day. This was a courageous fighter for national liberation.
Yes.
His entire life, he lived throughout the apartheid era. He was born in 31. Apartheid became the official policy in South Africa in 1948. I know we have young listeners there. We don't have enough time to go through the entire history of apartheid. But in times like this, on occasion like this, it's good to go out there and do some research on how horrific this racist system was, how destructive, how many black lives were destroyed by apartheid, a system supported and sustained by the West, by the United States, by Britain, and by Israel, which helped equip and train with the South African racist apartheid army and regime. Bishop Tutu lived through critical eras and points in South Africa's history. In 1948, when it became the official policy, he was still very young. In 1950, as the regime started criminalizing all major organizations that opposed it, Bishop Tutu was there. The South African Communist Party banned in 1950. And then after the Sharpeville Massacre of 1960, the ANC, the PAC, and all the leading anti-apartheid organizations. By that time, of course, the ANC had concluded that speaking with this monster was of no use and had decided to carry out an armed struggle. Mandela and many of the leaders were arrested. Many were exiled. The Rivonia trial of 1963-64 led to the conviction of Mandela and the life sentence. And thereafter, the voices of people like Bishop Tutu became much more prominent when people like Mandela were incarcerated. And for those not familiar with the Rivonia trial, I do strongly suggest you go online, go to the Guardian website, and listen to the speech that Mandela made at that trial. That speech probably saved his life because the prosecutor wanted to have him executed. But he was so persuasive in condemning, in a very analytical fashion, the monstrosity of the apartheid regime. And I believe that's why he got life in prison instead of being executed. The apartheid regime continued to clamp down in the 1960s, leading to the Soweto Massacre in 1976. Once again, young people were at the forefront, inspired by spiritual leaders like Bishop Tutu. They were just massacred in the streets. Many fled into exile. And these were the ones who were laid on to join in the liberation struggle by taking up arms. Others, of course, the leaders like Steve Biko, murdered in 1977. Leading the march against apartheid, encouraging the global community to join in the fight against apartheid, was Bishop Tutu, of course, joined by Winnie Mandela. These were the two leading generals when the leadership of the ANC either incarcerated, exiled, or being killed. The 1980s, the upheavals continued in the townships as the regime encouraged and promoted factional fighting amongst the leading anti-apartheid organizations. Meanwhile, voices such as Bishop Tutu's galvanized the global community in a divestment campaign on campuses in the U.S. against the apartheid monstrosity. Then came 1987, of course, leading to 1988, when Cuba, due to Fidel Castro's interest in Africa, Cuban soldiers fighting alongside the ANC's Umkhonto we Sizwe and SWAPO fighters decisively defeated South Africa in Angola, leading to the independence of Namibia in 1990, the release of Nelson Mandela in 1990, and then Bishop Tutu decided and, of course, took his position alongside Mandela, with Mandela now leading the push toward the finish line, which occurred in 1994 with the first democratic elections in South Africa, and Nelson Mandela becoming the first legitimate president of an independent South Africa. There was still much work to do after the end of formal apartheid, and we'll discuss that as the show continues today. Colin Benjamin.
Yes, sir.
Let me hear your Bishop Tutu.
Well, I'm not good. I guess I'm riveted, just like I'm sure the listeners are, with that brilliant synopsis that you give. I think what I would like to, where I would like to start off is, like, earlier you talked about who were his elites, right? The regular people that he spoke for. And for me, the thing with Bishop Tutu is that he embodies what we should really expect all of our, especially our spiritual leaders, to be, right? Who's speaking for the least of those. Over the past couple of days, we have heard several leaders, President Obama, call him the moral compass. I even saw a couple of headlines referring to him as the moral compass of South Africa. But I think he's really the moral compass, really, of the world, right? Because sadly, we live in a time where people like Archbishop Tutu are so far and few in between, who are willing to put themselves out there, speak truth to power bravely and boldly, regardless of who it is. Earlier today, I actually saw an article where an official in the Israeli government, he was praising Bishop Tutu, even while saying that, he's disappointed that Bishop Tutu didn't agree with them on the Palestinian issue. And of course, as...
Dan, what was he supposed to agree on? Please elaborate.
Well, basically, as we know that, the Palestinians are just facing this brutal occupation. Bishop Tutu spoke up forcefully back in 2014 about, the really abrasive military, actions that were being taken. So basically, but what was interesting to me about...
If he were to agree with the occupation, the annexation, the destruction of homes, dispossession, how would he then have been...
Well, of course, it was a bizarre statement, But what was also interesting to me, though, is to see where even this official in the Israeli government still felt like, well, you know, he had to commemorate Bishop Tutu. And I think one of the things there is that Bishop, you know, Archbishop Tutu had this kind of rare quality of being able to forcefully condemn injustice, but at the same time show compassion, forgiveness, and that spirit of reconciliation. And that's really, really very rare. So like his loss is it's a monumental loss because sadly, and you kind of hinted at it earlier, you know, in terms of spiritual leaders, I mean, we don't really have a lot of them that are really willing to really speak truth to power. I mean, imagine what our world would be like if we had, and this is, you know, this is irregardless of what the religion is. It could be Christian, is Muslim, Judaism, whatever. Imagine what our world would be if more of our religious leaders and our spiritual leaders had even like a little ounce of the honesty and the integrity that Bishop Tutu had. Imagine what our world would be like, because a lot of times I ask myself the question, how is it possible that in a world where we have war, we have famine, we have all these things that happen to little children, and you know, you will rarely hear some spiritual leader, especially in high positions, that really say anything, you know? And so his loss.
Why is that?
Why is that?
Because obviously you're speaking to many of the ministers that are out there that could be listening to the show right now as well.
Right. But I mean, I think the thing is that, you know, I mean, it's a question for us to consider and discuss, but obviously they lack the kind of care and compassion that the Archbishop had.
Oh, courage. Right?
Courage.
And the courage as well. Because how is it really possible that, you know, with all of the things that are going on, that we hear this loud silence from people who are supposed to be ministers of the people. They're supposed to be the shepherds leading the people. How is this possible? I mean, ask yourself what it would be like if a lot of these high ranking bishops and cardinals, you know, and different issues, what would happen if they spoke to their congregation, right? And encouraged their congregation to think about these things that are happening in our world, right? What kind of change would that make? And so, you know, we only get people like Bishop Tutu every now and then. We only get people like Dr. King now and then, you know. Unfortunately, most of our spiritual leaders are really failing us, if you're really honest.
So, message to spiritual leaders. Become a Bishop Tutu or Dr. King, and don't just quote them.
Exactly.
Actually speak power, then step out.
I mean, exactly.
A very brave one. The late Bishop Janani Lawum, who denounced Idi Amin's murderous regime and ultimately paid with his life in 1977. And then, of course, El Salvador.
Right, yes.
Murdered in 1980. These are my kind of bishops and archbishops, to be honest.
Yes, absolutely. You know? Absolutely, because, like, you know, right now, a lot of them are saying all of these things about him, but are they following that example? Right? You know, the, all these, you know, great quotes and stuff that they're saying about him, but you say to yourself, well, okay, where is, you know, why aren't you, right, championing some of these things that Archbishop Tutu championed?
Joining us. You're listening to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio. I'm your host, Milton Olimadi. We're discussing the life, legacy of Bishop, Archbishop Desmond Tutu with Black Star News Managing Editor Colin Benjamin. Listener, if you want to join in this celebration, you can call us at 209-2877. At this point, I'll ask you once again support WBAI, your favorite listener, independent. And you can do so by calling 209-2950. I also ask you to ask our power fund to pay for our transfer to four Times Square. And you can do so by going to towerfund.wbai.org. Colin Benjamin, are you still with me? Colin Benjamin, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, okay. Sir. You hear me now?
We're having a little bit of a technical glitch there. But at this point, we can hear some of Bishop Tutu's words. So if we can play video one, let's sample that clip so we can hear his voice.
Do you remember the one about the Archbishop? He dies and he goes to heaven, where he thinks he should be going. But when he gets there, St. Peter says, Nero, you don't belong here. You've got to go to the other place. So I go to the other place, the warmer place. And 2 weeks later, there is frenzied knocking on the doors of heaven. And St. Peter goes and he opens, and there's the devil standing on the doorstep. And Peter says, no, do you? What are you doing here? And the devil says, you sent Bishop Tutu down there. He's causing so much trouble. I've come to ask for political asylum.
That was Bishop Tutu. He was always cracking jokes,
right,
smiling. And in fact, that's what also made it easier for him to say, to speak truth to power. Early on.
Right. I mean, he was not afraid to show his humanity, you know, and you know, his humility as well, you know. So it's just a very rare person,
you know. And his bravery.
And very brave. And a giant for somebody that only stood about 5'4", I think.
Absolutely. You know,
but just a giant.
I remember one incident in 1985. That's the point when the regime was encouraging fighting amongst in South Africa. I was also infiltrating organizations, and in one instance, an alleged collaborator, a spy, was apprehended at this huge funeral with thousands of people. And people set his car on fire, and they wanted to toss him into the burning car. Bishop Tutu personally intervened, physically pushing people away and shielding this individual, wrapping him around his arm, and saying, if you're going to throw him in, throw me too. We need to forgive people like this. This is Bishop Tutu. How many ministers do you think would have done that?
Right, correct. Correct.
Just think about that. I was amazed after that. And then go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like, that's really the thing, right? Like, he was always willing, like the great ones always are, to go out on a limb, right, for the least of these, which is something that they usually say in church, but, you know, they don't really, usually when the time comes to really act on it, you know, that's a different story. But not for people like Archbishop Tutu.
I wish more people that are church-going can start telling their pastors, you know, Pastor, why don't you be more like Bishop Tutu? No, honestly.
No, really, yes.
As you said earlier, can you imagine if every African country had a Bishop Tutu or a Bishop Luwum.
Yes.
Or a Bishop Oscar Ramiro.
Yes.
You know, because sometimes we give up on people that are spiritual,
yes,
go to church just because some of us, you know, don't. And I think that's the wrong approach.
Yes, I agree.
What we need to do is to find and promote more people like the Bishop Tutus.
Exactly.
Who say, yes, yes, you can pray to your God. You can believe in peace, reconciliation, and all that.
Right.
But you can also be a soldier for justice. You know?
Yes. Yes.
Bishop Tutu said he was not a pacifist. He said, in fact, nonviolence as a tactic or strategy, because he realized that fighting the apartheid monster would just give the apartheid a fair advantage.
Right.
But he also said he had often thought that there might come a time when he may have to conclude that nonviolence was not sufficient. And he gave the example of Nazi Germany, for example. That how could you confront Hitler with nonviolence?
Right.
So he was a realist, a practical person.
Right.
And you wonder had Cuba not helped defeat the apartheid regime in Angola, how things might have turned out. Would things have continued to get worse, and might even our beloved Archbishop Tutu concluded that, indeed, we need to find other strategies to fight the apartheid regime.
Right. So in other words, he didn't have this kind of pie in the sky kind of thinking that, you know, too often we get from certain pastors, in other words.
All right, so we've now approached the midpoint of our show. Why don't we take a brief musical break, and then we'll be back for the second half hour of Black Star News Show. Greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome to the second half hour of Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio, also streaming on WBAI.org. I am your host, Milton Alimadi. Joining me today in the celebration of the lifetimes and legacy of Archbishop Desmond Tutu is Colin Benjamin, Managing Editor of Black Star News. Colin, welcome back to the second half hour of our show.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, brother.
Very good. Listeners, if you want to join in the celebration, of course, please dial 212-209-2877. And once again, I take this opportunity to remind you listeners that we are only here because of you. Without your permission and financial support, we would not be able to bring you a program like what you're listening to today. So please do continue to support us as we close the year. You can do so by dialing 212-209-2950 for your contributions. And please also support the Tower Fund. This is the campaign that we've organized to help pay for our transmitters located on Four Times Square. You can do so by going to towerfund.wbai.org. Colin Benjamin.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk briefly about the Truth and Reconciliation Project in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, Bishop Tutu led that commission, the Truth mm-hmm. and Reconciliation Commission. He was appointed by Nelson Mandela, and he led that process in 1995. And we heard some horrific, horrific statements what these agents of the monstrous regime, this monstrosity in South Africa, the apartheid regime, did to African sisters and brothers. That is an issue that is still being debated up today.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a sufficient process? I can relate to most of what was being done because the argument was that had it not been for that, the country could have lurched into an era of revenge seeking.
Mm-hmm.
And that of increase the instability, which was still there when Mandela became president,
mm-hmm.
and South Africa could have turned out like many of the African countries that unfortunately descended into instability after mm-hmm. political independence. So I can relate to that. But I think there were some people who came before that commission who should never have been eligible,
mm-hmm.
such as the murderers of Steve Biko. That's just one
right.
example.
Right.
And many, many fighters for national liberation whose lives are snuffed out by this regime. And mm-hmm. many of those people with bloody hands are still living out their lives in South Africa.
Right.
So what is your own view on that? I mean, balancing the argument that there's need for stability, while at the same time wondering what the families of people of Steve Biko must feel, or Solomon Malango, this young fighter for Umkhonto we Sizwe,
mm-hmm.
Who was not treated like a prisoner of war when he was captured, but he was hanged like a common criminal by the apartheid regime. And these are just a few examples. So what are your own views on that?
I tend to agree with you that there might have been maybe a little bit too much forgiveness, maybe for some particular perpetrators, like you said. But I mean, I guess we could wonder, we could kind of, well, as they say, Monday morning quarterback. But I do think that what you said earlier is what they were worried about, that it would descend into a kind of like revenge seeking. But at the same time, you still have to, you still have to follow the law. And so, yes, there are certain people that should have faced trial. I would agree.
And our people are a good people.
Correct. We're very forgiving. People. Yes.
That's why I really get riled up when,
yes.
you know, Africans are demonized as
criminals,
right. savages. You know, think about it. if they were not a decent people, do you think they would have needed permission to go out there and start seeking revenge for the crimes of the apartheid regime?
Exactly.
And economic inequity that still exists today? But let's discuss that in a minute. I see we have some callers. Let's take some, let's let our listeners join in this celebration. Could we take some of the calls, please? Caller, could you tell us who you are? Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and give us your contribution to this celebration.
Hi, Milton and Colin. This is Mayat from the Grotto, if you will. A point of clarification and then my comment on Bishop Tutu, and I appreciate the discussion. First of all, Milton, some time ago I emailed you in follow-up to your request around helping to get out the word for manufacturing hate. So I know you must get a ton of emails. So I will resend it, and I'll follow up with a phone call. So either pick up or call me back so we can move forward with that, if you will.
But thank you for that, sister.
I appreciate the discussion and reminder, too, that he had a unique sense of humor, which is very refreshing, and showed his brilliance. We need to go further into the truth and reconciliation.
Commission.
Right. It's interesting on several levels. First of all, we need to look at what was the result, as you were talking about, Milton, and the economic disparities that greatly continue, and the fact that we have never, in the U.S. of A., United States of Amnesia, if you will, have had anything that approaches that should even proceed any movement before reparations, it would seem. And of course, we have a political climate where, you know, there's intense effort to keep blacks from voting, and if they do, to do what Trump was trying to do legally, right? And the George Floyd Act can't get through, and the filibuster comes from the slaveocracy, so that just needs to be eliminated. But I'm just putting all these points for discussion, and in particular, when will the U.S. of A. have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission? And I look forward to your response, because I'll resend the email and I'll give you a call. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that comment. Colin, I have to say I agree with this caller that the United States actually does need a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. You cannot end the monstrosity of the enslavement regime and just, you know, say, okay, let...
By one century, is that going to happen?
But the conversation must continue. I mean...
Of course, absolutely.
In the past, the issue of reparations was seen as some fringe conversation.
Right.
Now it's being discussed on the floors of the House of Representatives. So I think things can change, but people have to affect that change.
To push it.
So let's see if we can take another call. Caller, tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and give us your comments.
Yes, my name, L, from Long Island. And I will briefly state the Archbishop was a very unique person, and is, because even though he is no longer with us in this world, there is another world which we all will travel to.
Indeed.
Do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I think that the main objective in celebration of his life, Steve Biko, Jomo Kenyatta, Miriam Makeba, would be, and so many others, Patrice Lumumba, would be for the education, and it can't be done in one show, but the education of us as a people in the world. We have a home base, and we need to strive for unity and for oneness in that home base, because there lies our power.
I agree.
There we can demand, not beg, not go to a reconciliation. We have no power there. We have no power. Today, all of those that died, especially the young, what are they given? Do they have their own piece of ground? Are they being paid decent salaries, or are they being paid wine?
If they're working at all.
In the place of salary or part salary in South Africa. And keep in mind, history is a wonderful thing, so we must study it. The indigenous people here were given what they call fire water. We're given fire water. And in South Africa, they're given fire water. So we need to look at it from an economic and from a point where we have the most, how could I say, the most important points that we should focus on. Not have one country less than half a mile from another country, and yet to cross over with goods, it takes more than a week because you need a passport to go into another country. 55 or 56 countries.
Right.
None of them can support themselves. Where the income of a city here in the U.S. is equal to the income of the country for a year.
Right. So, caller?
Yes.
Would you like
to? I thank you for giving me the time.
Absolutely. Thank you for your call. Colin, I agree with this caller.
Yes.
That as Kwame Nkrumah said in his book, Neocolonialism, The Last Stage of Imperialism, Africa's so-called poverty is artificial. And what did he mean by that? He meant it is set up that way because you can't have all the resources. That is enriching the rest of the world, and yet you remain impoverished. That's why he called it artificial. And he said, how can we address this? And he prescribed exactly what the caller just alluded to, that we need to have a United States of Africa. And he worked all his life advocating for that. He said, because as a United States of Africa, all these countries wouldn't be able to be strong enough to come and just take whatever they want from Africa, or to overthrow leaders whom they don't like. So yes, the blueprint is out there. It's a brilliant book. And so I thank the caller for that.
Let me add to that too.
Let me just welcome some listeners. Listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM New York, also live streaming on WBAI.org, and I am your host, Milton Alimadi, and today we are celebrating the life and times of Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who joined the ancestors on Sunday at the age of 90. And listeners, ignore that fire truck in the background. Listeners, we are only here because of your support. So please continue to support us. You can do so by dialing 212-209-2877. Your contributions are appreciated. Actually, that's the number for the callers. Callers, 212-209-2877, the number for the callers. To support us with your contribution, the number is 212-209-2950. You can also support our tower fund, which is very critical, because without the transmitter on 4 Times Square, we also cannot be here to bring you these shows. So you can support us for the Tower Fund by going to towerfund.wbai.org. Yes, go ahead, Colin. And then I think we may have one more call.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, because, you know, I know we're not going to have a chance to actually talk about some of the big stories. But when the listener was talking, what I was reflecting on was this year's inaugural CARICOM Africa Summit. And the whole purpose of that summit was to address exactly a lot of those particular problems that, you know, that the listener was alluding to.
The lack of a common approach, common strategy, the lack of unity between the Caribbean and African countries. Yes.
Correct.
Totally. That was an important a summit.
Yes. And so a lot of those issues, because they said that every September 7th, following from this year, they will have the summit. And they talked about things like the blue economy, you know, about different trading arrangements. They talked about actually rescinding the needs for visas to travel in between countries.
I mean, that's what we really need. We can't just have this spiritual Pan-African. We have to act on it.
Act on it.
And I want to also actually talk about Bishop Tutu and the realization that he came to, that getting rid of the apartheid regime in itself was not sufficient. Mm-hmm. And I like that in recent years, he had become very critical of the ANC elite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said very explicitly when Jacob Zuma was the president that mm-hmm. one day we will start praying for the downfall
of the ANC
regime. He condemned mm-hmm. this new class of elite, wealthy Africans mm-hmm. that emerged in the post-apartheid era. The president of South Africa, for example, Cyril mm-hmm. Ramaphosa. This guy is a billionaire, not in South African rand, but in U.S. dollars. Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. So Bishop Tutu was saying, how can we have that class, and yet we have students learning, sitting under trees for lessons, mm-hmm. schools mm-hmm. without textbook, people going to bed hungry at night. This was the Bishop Tutu. And I right. hope that, of course, he was already at an advanced age, but I hope the younger generation, the Julius Malema generation, can proceed from that and continue the fight. Because look, today, as we speak today, the European South African population, which is less than 8%, still controls more than 70% of the land. That's outrageous. That is a spitting on the graves of Mandela, of Sisulu, of Tutu, of Winnie,
Hani, and all of them.
Chris Hani, of Lutuli, and all those fighters, Biko, all those fighters of national liberation. Let's see if we can take one or two more calls.
Hello?
Yes, caller, tell us where you're calling from, your name, and give us your question quickly because we're running out of time.
I'm calling from Brooklyn. I would like to say that the revolution in South Africa wasn't complete. I mean, that Truth and Reconciliation Committee, the only person that went into jail was Winnie Mandela. They cascaded her and put her in jail. But the European people or the African people, they're living better now than they lived before.
She was actually pardoned. She did not go to jail. But otherwise, I agree with your comment. Yeah.
They castigated her. Right. You know, they tried to. They outlawed her. Made her feel like she was such a villain.
I agree. And any mistakes that she might have made, the apartheid regime. In fact, to me, it's remarkable that this woman was not driven insane by the harassment and attacks and abuse by the apartheid regime all these years, as she, as I said earlier, and Bishop Tutu were the only ones who were out there at the forefront. Well, they were leading with many others, of course, but they were the prominent ones when Mandela was incarcerated Many were killed. Many were exiled. So thank you for that. Do we have one more call?
One more.
Yes, go ahead, caller. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And give us your quick comment.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this program on Bishop Tutu. But Bishop Tutu and people like Dr. King, they're described as religious leaders, but they seem to be dissidents from religion. Because religion, the religious movement, the religious community, the world religious community, embraces imperialism, capitalism, whereas these people don't. And, you know, I'm wondering why Bishop Tutu and Dr. King remained a member of this deity-based theology as opposed to going to a totally ethical-based religion. Because, you know, I heard Bishop Tutu in a speech say, the God we serve is very weak. He can do nothing without us.
Thank you. Thank you for that, caller. And I'm sorry we're just running out of time. But in the response to part of what you said, it's very interesting, that question you just posed. Chris Hani, for example, a leading fighter of national liberation in South Africa, was actually a committed Catholic, but at the same time, he was also the leading member of the South African Communist Party. And, you know, he said he did not see any contradiction. That the Christian faith and spirituality hardened it and gave them that determination to fight for downtrodden people. And that's why, that was why he actually ended up being a member of the Communist Party. But that is all the time we have. And sorry for that fire engine in the background, but I think this has been a great conversation. Please visit blackstarnews.com as well. Follow me on Twitter. Colin Benjamin, how can listeners get in touch with you?
They could email me colin_b30@yahoo.
Listeners, thank you. That's all the time we have. We'll continue this conversation in another show. Remain safe and remain Pan-African. Thank you.
Show presented by WBAI in New York City. And yes, it's that time of the year. It's the time for Fun Drive. It's the time where we open our hearts and thank WBAI for being here for us every day, all year. It's super important for us now to give back. And I've donated to WBAI. I am hoping that you will join me. Remember, this is listener-supported radio. That's you, the listener. It is time for you to pick up your phone and support. You can call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Or you can go online at WBAI.org and donate to the Tower Fund. The goal this year is to raise enough money in the next 2 weeks that we can pay the entire next year of rent at the beginning of the year, so we don't have the rent hanging over us, so everyone can feel less stress. And we've had such a successful year at, you know, getting ahead of the game. The national management of Pacifica, supporting the team, supporting the producers and the staff. It's been a great year. So we really want to start out 2022 fantastic. So you can help make that happen by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950, or going online at WBAI.org and donating to the Tower Fund. So let's just remember, if there wasn't WBAI, we would be stuck with mainstream media. That is the media that lies to you all day. That is the media that is brought to you by the war machine that repeats the lies and the disinformation from the State Department that would make you dumber, but not only dumber. That mainstream media works to make